Well, hey, Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. For those tuning in live, it's a little earlier than normal. This is just the best time for Steven and I to align. So, hello, everyone. And hey, we have Taco and Yoshi in the chat. Hello.
Hey, cheers. Yeah,
welcome, everyone. It is, September 12th. Yesterday, 9/11 stuff. Not that there's anything like directly related to Gundam on my Blue Gamer. I was kind of reflecting on, gaming wise, like where I was, a lot of times when it comes to video games, when things happen in time, I kind of look at like, what was I doing gaming wise? And then I can kind of remember what was going on around.
And such a fascinating time too, because you can see the impact that it left on video games, right? Like,
yes,
there was the whole Metal Gear Solid 2 controversy, there was so much cut content because of that. So,
And the thing I don't know, I think I heard some of this too, like right after, like maybe on Toonami or whatever, like some Gundam shows. I don't know if maybe during that time they made a delayed. Doesn't that sound familiar?
I think there was some something that was kind of edited for content. I want to say that there was even something that Tomino himself like self-censored, something to do with.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I just bring it up because, just to say, hey, let's remember, because that is kind of a sad and crazy situation that happened. So
absolutely.
But so for today, we have a lot of stuff to talk about because you had posted a link about the stuff at the Gundam base that, like, once you show up is gone. But
yeah,
it's coming back up November 1st, so we're going to look at that.
That's awesome. I mean, so first of all, thank you for your flexibility, getting me on the show today, because I know that, yesterday we had some scheduling issues just trying to get you on as well. And so I appreciate you running a little early today so that I can join you in my Blues Brothers attire, Ian put it. I got a little bit of an eye injury, so I'm not going to subject you guys to that horrific visage. But we had Ricky Hoskin on, who is one of the local builders here, and he attended the Gundam base event as well. And it was so sort of serendipitous that after I interviewed him and we talked a little bit about Gundam base, then Bandai Hobby US made that post that's like, hey, by the way, we're going to be making all the exclusives available on P Bandai,
which is good, because I wonder if maybe they under allocated and then they heard maybe people complaining, because that seems like a pretty interesting way to go about it. Like, here's just things you can get exclusively, but afterwards, here's where you can get it exclusively.
Yeah. And it goes back to the rule that you and I always follow, where it's like, we don't like to attribute motive to actions unless there's some clear indication. Right. So it's like, you have to look at it in terms of, were they always going to make those things available online, or is this a response to the overwhelming turnout that has happened at the Gundam base mobile tours? And so as you and I have been kind of critical of certain marketing actions that Bandai has taken in the past few years, this is one of those opportunities for us to kind of praise them for something that I think they're doing right, which is responding to fan response, right?
It's exactly it. Like, yeah. So I would rather just say, oh, they didn't realize the turnout. That's great. More people are wanting to show up to Gundam bases so they can get more product out to people. So yeah, I think that's pretty cool. But, speaking of, that interview you had yesterday, if you guys didn't check it out, make sure you check Steven's channel afterwards to check that out. That's pretty cool. Okay. What do we have next? Here's the other thing. And I'm going to share my screen real quick. This NoZP7BX is the winner of that giveaway. Of the Aerial Gundam High Grade, the Bright Custom Real Grade. So NoZP7BX, please reach out to me via email, GundamExplained@gmail.com.
Hey, congratulations. It's so funny, when you announced that giveaway, I forgot about the Team Monster and Team Bright Customs that were associated with that Battlelog.
Because it's not really mentioned much, and that's a kind of a neat thing in the Gundam world, to have like kind of that live action-y thing,
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was actually. So NoZP says 7 high grades and 2 master grade accessory sets on the backlog right now. That's That's a good number, but well, I have a lot
to add to it.
Yeah, exactly. But I have a lot more kits that I've snapped together and still plan to paint in detail. Okay, cool. Yeah, because that's another way to go about it is a lot of times just building something, maybe later detailing it. Yeah, it's like phases. It's almost, and I guess that could go with the seasons. Like some seasons it's better to paint anyway.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. So anyway, yeah, congrats to NoZP. Yeah, just email me. We'll get you set up. Cool. So what Gundam stuff have I got into this week? That's usually the other thing I like to talk about. And let me pull up
yesterday's video.
Well, yeah. So yesterday's video, the Rick Diaz Robot Spirits Ver anime, those are my most, I've mentioned this before, I have the most fun doing those videos for some reason. But they're the least viewed. But but what's interesting,
but they're the most appreciated.
Well, that's that. Thank you. No, but that's hey, that's how like people like Ian found my channel. So
yeah, absolutely.
But what's interesting? Okay, that's a collectible, right? A Robot Spirits collectible. Monday, I had another collectible review, and that was the Gun Barrel Strike from Gundam Breaker 4, and that one did crazy. But that is a more interesting thing to look at a review of, in my opinion. Just the normal Rick Diaz, the non Quattro, like who cares? Not really, but the Gun Barrel Strike, that's one where it's like, okay, what is this about? Just because it is only available in the collector's edition, right? Have they historically mm-hmm. released video game only stuff later?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Because I think this is really cool to not be, you know what I mean? Like it's not like it's about the game, but if you look at it, it's not like, oh, Gundam Breaker 4. It's like, wow, that's a neat design with the colors and stuff. So like to get people into Gundam. And so what I'm saying is this seems like more like, because it's an entry gate, a model kit you would put in Target.
Yeah. I mean, I think that visually it's really appealing too. I mean, yeah. I loved when you reviewed it and showed the box art because it's some of the most fantastic box art that they've ever done with an exclusive, right? I mean,
yeah, all the colors.
I'm P Bandai's biggest shill. And yet, yes. You know, one thing that I have to point out about P Bandai is that the box art is so disappointing, the way that it's monochrome. You know, they don't do the full color box art for P Bandai, at least most P Bandai. Some of them, they get an exception here and there. But, you know, the fact that they went all out for that strike is really cool. And I think that if you were to see that on a shelf at Target, like, even if you're not a Gundam fan, you might pick that up just because it's pretty slick.
Also, plus it's in that Battlelog line, so it's made to have multiples to do customizations with it. So it could be that they release it, but without maybe the thingy.
Without the missile pods, yeah. Missile pods,
yeah. For something, yeah. It'd be interesting to see what they do with that.
And now, you don't have any like 30-minute missions or anything like that, like any of those customized parts that you can maybe snap onto it, do you?
I do have one in the attic. Maybe I can try that out. Yeah, it's something I got maybe a couple years ago and just didn't, you know. But I still have it up there because I do have like a thing in my attic that's just like all these extra or unwanted Gunpla parts.
I mean, that's the one thing that I did pick up from the Gundam base. It was probably one of the two Gundam base exclusive things that they still had was the option parts set that comes with the Zaku machine gun and like the giant Gatling gun.
Yeah.
Which is kind of silly because it's like, come on, every Zaku comes with a Zaku machine gun, but now I have an extra one. But you know, it's like I wanted something that had the Gundam base limited sticker on it, right?
Yeah. And were you saying you were, or I forgot that, you know, that Mark II?
Yeah, they had the 21st century marking 21st. Type Mark II and Char Zaku. And one thing I will say is even though they are releasing everything online, you're not going to be able to get the limited edition tote That's bag. Right.
That's right. Which, by the way, I don't know if they are the same size, but it perfectly fits the perfect grade box.
It does. Yeah, that was
when I bought it, like the perfect grade box. I was like, okay, they planned this out.
Yeah, they definitely they engineered their tote bags to fit the Gunpla that they were moving out there. So that's cool. I mean, and so for the people that think like, well, why did I even bother going out to the Gundam base if they were going to release the stuff online? There's obviously more to appreciate there than just the product.
Being with real life humans.
Go figure. Yeah. touch pavement, I guess, was the because there was any grass there,
right? Okay, so yeah, the other Gundam stuff I got into, which, by the way, here is the newer Rick Diaz, and then the old one, which they almost look the same. Maybe the reds are a little different. There's more to it, but this is the type of obscure content I like. I'm going to do a video where I compare the two.
No, I think that's, like I said, it's you're doing the Lord's work here, because the truth is, I feel like, you know, the Robot Spirits line does get overlooked by most Gundam fans. Not even, like I said, not even because it's not that they're, it's not that they're not awesome products. It's that just people aren't aware of them as readily.
Yeah, it's, there's that. And then if someone's already into Gundam, most likely they like Gunpla. And when they see that, and then they see that's not a kit, it could be that their first thought is, oh, well, you know, I don't collect action figures. You know, that wouldn't make sense, you know? And so I get that.
But then when you see all the accessories that they come with, like, man.
And how much you can integrate a lot of that with your high-grade dioramas or setups or something. So,
and the articulation on those the Ver anime Rick Diaz is insane compared to the high grade Rick Diaz.
Yeah, that's interesting now, because at one point I would say like model kits from Bandai and action figures are comparable, like with their articulation, but it's now getting to a point where there's articulation happening on the Robot Spirits that require engineering, where things have to be fitted. So you can't just build it. You know, you have to, because yeah, it's, although, you know, you look at some of the engineering in a real grade and it's like, you know, that's pretty good. I think the end result is the having the pieces stay together. Cause when there's a lot of movement, there is more opportunity for pieces to fall apart. So with it, I guess if you were to like glue, now that's something, I don't know if you've come across this or you've done it, but has anyone that we know of taken a model kit and glued everything that didn't require movement?
I mean, I typically will do that for some kits.
If you have one that you can pull out sometime, I would like to see that, because I'm very interested in maybe taking some of my older kits and doing that to kind of make it a more structurally sound action figure.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a great idea, honestly. Anything that's not supposed to be articulated, definitely like glued into place. You know, for instance, one of the things I think about a lot is like the real grades, how typically they'll have two parts for the skirts, right? They'll have like the inner frame part of the skirt, and then they have the armor plate. There's no reason, unless you like displaying the kit with just the inner frame, there's no reason to ever like take it off, right? So like that's an easy candidate for gluing that in place, right?
Yeah, good point, because those things do pop off.
They do. It's like all you do is move the leg up, and
just like on the little armor pieces on the foot, usually one of those will come off. That's a very common one.
So now you have a couple of the high complete models, right? Like the 1-200 scale.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I wonder, have you ever like gone to try and take one of those apart? Because I personally haven't.
No, good question. Because every time I've gotten them, they've been either completely built or maybe it had some extra parts. But I've messed around with them like crazy, and they don't fall apart.
So I'm curious what their method is, like how they are able to have all the articulation that they have. They're already built for you, but they are at the end of the day still model kits. They're just completed for you.
Yeah, that is interesting.
I've never had one fall apart on me the way that, you know.
Yeah, does. I haven't either. But you know what? I've even been thinking about getting more. Because I think the other day I accidentally ran across, what was it? I forget which, where I thought it was, you know, 1/44th scale thing. And then I click, it's like, it's one of those. I need to get back into those.
It's a cool line.
But yeah. Okay, so speaking of what we were just talking about, the Gundam based stuff, let's look at that real quick. Okay.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are going to be excited to see, you know, all of these things. I think you even mentioned on Discord, like there's some good stuff in here if you can get it.
Yeah, you know, for instance, like a Gundam based RX-72, not a big deal, but it's kind of a fun thing, I guess, and $10. You know, like that's so to me, as a Gundam base exclusive, maybe because of the colors, sure, but otherwise, you know, or like this the Gunplacoon DX set, that's pretty neat. I wouldn't necessarily get it. And then moving down here, other things seem pretty cool, like the real grade high new titanium finish.
Oh yeah, I did. I saw somebody on my Discord server was very interested in the high new. You know what? But you just gave me an idea. I'm gonna grab some visual aids here to share with
Oh,
you.
visuals. I like that. But I'm curious, those in the chat, if you're looking like, or anyone that's watching to comment, like, does a Gundam-based themed model kit really excite you at all? For me, it doesn't. I mean, it's cool when the box says Gundam-based, but I don't care about it looking like it's from Gundam-based.
Yeah, I mean the colors like they're kind of cool, but I guess I wouldn't be too interested in it.
It's like
But
a
you know
completionist
what?
thing, I
One of the
think.
things we were talking about is like, you know, they had that 6-foot Gundam statue at the Gundam base, but the Hobbytown store, because it's a Bandai flagship store, they already had a 6-foot RX-78 in
Yeah,
there.
that's right. You're telling me that. And it's always
So
there.
how cool would it have been? Like, even if you're not going to do a different statue, do the RX-78 statue in the Gundam base colors.
That would make more sense.
But yeah, so some of the freebies that they had at the Gundam base, like obviously you could get your picture taken, and they had like little
That is cool.
you know, different like frames and things that you could choose from. But they also gave out these sweet little Tamashii Nations plastic folders that came with a bunch
Oh
of stuff
yeah.
inside them.
That's for some reason Bandai creates those all the time.
Yeah, a great little marketing piece. But one of the things that reminded me of this was when you brought up Gunpla Coon, because this is like a Gunpla collector's guide, like intro book, right?
Oh.
Now, some of the visuals in here should look very familiar because they've been posting some of these graphics on their Instagram page and on Twitter. And it's like all of the basic, you know, how to assemble Gunpla, how to remove gate marks, you know, how to panel line things. So it really is like one of those, you know, if you're interested in getting started in Gunpla, you know, hey, here, pick up an option kit and make your own custom units and, you know,
Was
stack
that
them up.
free or was that a?
Yeah, this was just included in the
Oh,
bag.
that's great.
So, I mean, these are cool things that I think now obviously the people that are hardcore Gunpla fans are not going to be interested in like that little I'm keeping the guide because I think it's cool, but
Yeah, so that's the same thing with me. I would like a guide like that. Like that's a good idea, especially like the little things that says in there. Like sometimes it reminds me of this book, Atomic Habits, which just talked about having good habits. Sometimes
yeah.
it's just nice to have a refresher on best practices with Gunpla because,
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, you can get complacent sometimes. And
Don't forget to panel line.
it's funny, they've got that Haropla Black Tri. I actually have that, not the clear version. Okay, the high grade unicorn perfectibility.
That's pretty
That looks
sweet.
cool. That looks cool. Although I do like the Haro, mobile Haro, Haropla.
If they had had a mobile Haro, I would have picked up one of those because that's pretty cool.
Yeah, if I ever see that, although I do have one, but it's not like this. I think it's a smaller body. I don't know if that sounds familiar, but
Yeah, it kind of looks more like a boxer.
And then just looking down here, other stuff. I mean, it's cool to see something like a clear V2 or second V, but at the same time, who asked for that? I think it's cool, but I.
Yeah, I don't like clear kits personally at all. But oh man, the Torohachi, you and I talked about that a couple weeks ago, like the 172 scale.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's something about, like, I guess it would be if it's like a piece in terms of, okay, this is something I have a personal attachment to and they have a clear version, I don't know.
Yeah, or I think one of the things that separates it is like I would never necessarily get like a high grade clear coat version because if you're going to display that, the benefit of that is that you get to see the internals. So a
Oh
clear
yeah, that's right.
armor like real grade would be kind of cool because then you can see the internals of the kit and everything.
Yeah, good point. Because the Eclipse right here is a master grade. Now the Aerial is a high grade, and maybe just because of the nature of the Aerial's design, it seems to work. Although it's less about looking transparent because it's kind of a slimmer body anyway. So yeah.
There's not much to see through.
Yeah, cool stuff. You know what about the unicorn? You know how, like, you have your favorite mobile suit,
Yeah.
but there's a couple of them. We all have a couple favorite mobile suits. And I think sometimes we secretly like some more than the others. And I really think secretly deep down, the unicorn is my favorite.
Really? Do you think it was because it was the first build?
I wonder. Because when I'm playing Gundam Breaker 4, as soon as I could, well, as soon as I saw it pop up, I built the full armor unicorn and made it canon to the weapons, the armaments, all the abilities, made it just like it would be in the show. And that's all I've been doing. And because I think it's cool. Like, it's unicorn mode, looks badass, especially the full armor, because it almost looks like, okay, this is more of a weapon than a superhero. And then
yeah,
the story mode to me is a little fantastical. I accept it. But that's kind of cool because it's almost like the nature of what it is good for a video game. You know, a thing that transforms to fight and then has all the armor and weapons.
I still wish that in the Gundam Breaker games, like if there was, you know, a unicorn mode or an exam mode or something like that, like that you could use other parts from mobile suits that don't have those modes and still get the transform state, right?
Yeah, and I'm curious if maybe that is possible and I haven't figured it out, because I did see a video where someone was moving skills. Well, yeah, there's a way to move skills when you're synthesizing, but I've never looked to see if it's those specific ones, and that could be what it is, because I don't know. But you see, here's the thing, and I just figured this out when I've been playing Gundam Breaker 4. Again, it's one of those games where you can spend 30 hours and only play it one way, and someone else can spend 30 hours and play it a completely different way. Like I brought that up in my review, but the more and more I think about it, the more I think it represents Gunpla is Freedom, like to a T. It's a video game, but just in general for Gundam, that game is that.
And you know, it's funny because I draw that kind of same distinction between something like Gundam Breaker 4 and Armored Core, which everyone, you know, obviously loves the Armored Core video game series. I never really got into it myself, but like, you know, I haven't seen anybody with Gundam Breaker 4 in particular. With Gundam Breaker 3, it was easier to sort of cheese the system and have like an optimized build. But I've never seen anyone do like, this is the peak build to just cheese through all of Gundam Breaker 4, because they made it so enjoyable to play every different style of.
Okay. Maybe you just answered to them, because to me, I feel like you can. It's like you can. But it's more of, because you're creating your own way to fight that makes it feel like you're cheesing, but you're not. You've just found that flow. Because
that's the thing, is it's not a particularly hard game. So you can be successful at it no matter what your build is. Yeah. Whereas like a game like Armored Core, you know, obviously the difficulty level is brutal. And so there becomes this. It's like a feedback loop of like, okay, well then I have to create the most optimized build. It doesn't matter if it's what I like visually or I'm going tank mode because I know that that's the way to win.
I see what you're saying. Cause it would be where I would be in a boss in Armored Core that it's like, okay, if I use this, then I'll finally beat it. But yeah, Gundam Breaker 4, you don't have to worry about that. The most would be, I should level up my pieces because that blast will kill me in one hit. Otherwise I will never die. Cause that's the thing. I'm in chapter 7, maybe near the end, which is the last chapter of Gundam Breaker 4. There's not one part. I don't think I failed a mission. I don't think I've gone through the whole thing. I think I might have quit a mission. Like I went on extreme difficulty just to see and like how I would be there for hours because of the enemy health.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we were talking earlier today about like tabletop role-playing games and like how sometimes the enemies that you'll get in like a D&D game or something, it's just like they're just bags of hit points, right? So when it comes to difficulty level, instead of having multiple different layers or levers that you can pull to make the game more challenging in different ways, it's just like, okay, we're going to level up the health of the enemy until it becomes. And then that's when you start to get into like slog territory where.
That's the thing. It's like, I could easily complain about this game, but it's like it knows what it's doing on purpose. That's why this really should be a cross-play and mobile game. Because again, this is more about enjoyment of Gunpla for all. less than like, oh, here's a video game. Like, here's
exactly,
you know, because yeah,
it's not like it's leveraging the processing power of a particular console. You know, it's like it's not the headline of the PS5 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that Gundam Breaker 4 should be like one of the games that you've talked about before that are almost more like they're not games, they're just platforms, Call of Duty or Fortnite or Roblox, where it's like, of course you have Fortnite mobile. Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And you know what? That's interesting, because just thinking of Fortnite, for instance, it was out for a while. And then there was that recent upgrade to the Unreal Engine 5. And because Breaker's already on in that engine, they could always make sure, okay, there'll be a year where, okay, everybody that's playing Gundam Breaker, we're going to refresh new engine. All the model kits are going to be upscaled, you know, up-resed, whatever. So I think there's a way that you can, it's like people can buy all the kits, but then you can come out with clear color versions. You know, it's like they could keep coming out. Oh, okay. Now this is getting bad. I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. They can even have it where there's like limited time store where you can buy a kit, and then you have to like wait a year if it pops up again.
Right. Yeah. Or then they mass release it. Like, you have to be there for the event.
Yes. And then later they mass release it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
They really should have a exclusive like P Bandai kits in Gundam Breaker 4. That
yeah, I know that would be funny. Yeah, even on P Bandai, where it's like, here's a kit, but it's just a digital item for
right. But we're still gonna take 6 months to fulfill it.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
You have to pre-order it for the in-game purchase, but even though it's already
yeah, it's just like March 2025. It's like, oh, all right, well, okay,
that makes sense.
Although that did happen, let me actually pull this up.
Oh, is that a good segue?
Yeah, that is actually a good segue, because so this is a sick looking mobile suit, people, and I totally forgot that this was up for pre-order. Again, it's one of those where pre-orders actually close soon, but I was like, February 2025, and it's like, I saw this and I was like, well, I want it now. So it's like, guys, look at my mentality. I'm like, I could buy this right now, but because I can't get it right now, I'm not even going to spend the money to pre-order it until it comes out, and then it's going to be $120.
Exactly right.
It's kind of a weird thing where I think this just comes down to like managing my money and my purchases, and be like, it's okay that I don't get it right now.
I don't know. Has this ever happened to you? Because it definitely just happened to me this year, where you pre-order something on P Bandai, you forget that you made it through the first pre-order, and then when they drop the second pre-order, you get it again.
Wow. No, I think you've mentioned that before.
It was funny because I remember distinctly, I was like, oh, you know, I'll just probably pick up the RX-81 secondhand. Like, I'm not going to get on a pre-order. I don't have the cash right now. And then I was like, I remember getting in on the second pre-order and I was like, sweet. And then July this year, I got one in the mail and I was like, wait a second. And then I went back through my emails and I was like, holy crap, I pre-ordered it twice. So,
wow. But I could see that, because there's this thing, yeah, that happens when you're buying Gundam stuff. Like, not, could it be it's something in your backlog, or you just forgot you pre-ordered it? Like, yeah, that. And shout out to Santo Bell, 2:30 a.m. in Australia. But wanted to say hello. Thanks, man.
Wow, 12 hours from where I'm at. That is crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. That's why it's cool. Like, Santo Bell has been like part of this ride since I started, and he's always popping in. He's the Gundam Breaker 4 guy also, if you have questions. The other thing I want to bring up here, Byron Navarre, Gundam EX MG Verka Wen. That sounds amazing. Because I can't even imagine Kotoki's going to do a variant, but I would want him to.
It sounds like the title of the latest Gundam Versus game, right? Like,
dude, that is so hilarious. The next Gundam game, Gundam Versus games, at the end, let's just add when question
mark. Yeah, and the question mark has to be part of it. Yeah. No, that's so funny. I'm actually, do you think that they're going to come out with any master grades of the Requiem for Vengeance kits, or well, suits?
Another excellent segue, Stephen. My gosh, it's like we went over this beforehand, and actually we did not. But so I'm thinking about that too, because, and this will relate, you know, the original Mobile Suit Gundam movies, you know, the show cut into the movies, then went to theaters in Japan, early 80s, is coming to the U.S. in October, and there's actually multiple theaters around me playing them. So they're doing this around the Requiem for Vengeance launch. Like, I don't think this is coincidence, you know? Like, I wouldn't think so, and because I would hope that, yeah, they're planning this. It's like, okay, let's get the original out there in theaters. While theaters are, like, what? People are going back to the theater. Some movies don't tend to do well, but some are doing surprisingly, like, you know, Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Surprisingly well. So, like, this is a good time to have the original Mobile Suit Gundam in the theater while Netflix is getting Requiem for Vengeance to really hone in on telling people about Gundam, about Universal Century, you know, like, it, because this obviously could lead into the live action movie that the rumor is it could be a rendition of this first movie.
I mean, that would be pretty cool. I think that, like, and I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head with this, where Beetlejuice did well in theaters because of the event, because of the experience around it, right? It's not just content to be consumed. And I think that you're seeing the same sort of thing with Gundam, right? Where watching the first three movies and then Char's Counterattack in theaters, it's more about an experience, an event, right? It's not just consuming the next movie.
Exactly, because for me, it's like, okay, this thing I fell in love with that I didn't get to see in theaters, there's a chance to do it, and then, like, maybe I can find other people around. It was pretty cool. My wife was excited to go, and what's cool about that is because she's watched the original Gundam with me, and she liked it because it plays like a classic cartoon.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's funny because she doesn't like any other Gundam.
Well, like you said, it's almost like Scooby-Doo, where at the end of every episode you're pulling the mask off of a mobile suit and it's like, it was Romba Roll the whole time.
Yeah, and a lot of it too is the music, because it evokes that time period of, like, watching those old cartoons. And that's where I think Zeta shines, you know? Like, oh yeah, my wife also likes the beginning of Zeta, where, like, because it's very much like that too.
Yeah. Well, and that's a very important thing to point out, is that the gap between the first three movies airing and then Char's Counterattack coming back to theaters is enough time to watch all of Zeta Gundam.
Wait, yeah. So, one, that's funny.
Yeah.
Because it's true. Because, two, that is a good point that it's in March.
Exactly. It's like in October, you get movies 1, 2, and 3. And then March of next year is when Char's Counterattack is coming back to theaters, which means that you can watch, like, all of Zeta Gundam and Double Zeta for that matter,
unless
you're a real Gundam fan.
But you could be bringing up that there is a plan, that's why there's that March date. Maybe they are planning to do something related to Zeta.
Well, in March
in 85.
True. Yeah. 85. So we would be coming up on 40th anniversary of Zeta.
Wow. Okay. I think things are aligning. Did we just crack the case?
The Mark II, the Psycho Gundam Mark II comes out in March too.
Oh my God.
It's like everything is.
You did it, Steven. No, that is interesting. I really
I feel like Charlie and that always funny meme.
Oh yeah. But you brought up Scooby-Doo at the beginning, kind of the same thing. We solved the case in a way. No, but I would like to see something happen. So it could be that the Zeta goes into theaters, or it could be that 0081 is in for Christmas. Oh my God, the dots are connecting.
No kidding. You know, it would be interesting if a new translation was put in theaters as well, because, like,
yeah. And they might as well do it, because they can with the original. I think they should with Zeta. You know, that would be interesting too, because I feel like, let me know what you think about this. I love Zeta, but I really always center on the series rather than the trilogy, even though I love the art and animation in the trilogy. But in my mind, I'm always thinking series in terms of, like, episode chunks and, like, when things happen.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely prefer the series. There are some things that are interesting about the movies. Like you said, the animation, particularly the mobile suit combat animation, is amazing. I think that especially Rosamia gets the chance to shine in the movies that you don't get to see her kind of doing cool things with the Gaplant the way that she does in the movies.
That's the thing. The movies give the other side of the things we want. Like, okay, let's update the art, the look of things, like the Colony Laser. Is that the one I'm thinking of? The Colony Laser battle?
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many scenes that add some cool context. Like one of my favorite scenes is, or at least from the movies, is when Haman and Scirocco finally kind of like seal the deal on their alliance. And Scirocco's got all of the Titans lined up with him. And it's like, you've got Yazan and his two guys, you've got Sarah, you've got Jared, and they're all standing there at attention, like, you know, almost like this imposing force that the Titans are. And this is kind of like where they're manipulating Haman into you know, joining forces with them. And that's something that you didn't get in the original. Like, it's all like kind of heavily implied. So it's just interesting the things that they decided to flesh out in the movies, but then they cut other things that were more important, like such as four. So,
you know what, in that's interesting. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I'm just realizing it now. George Lucas was the special editions, Tomino with new translation.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I just put that together, or maybe we talked about it and I forgot, but that's just another thing. Sometimes when we look at properties of fiction, we like how the creator then sort of works with it in the future. I mean, I think we've talked about where I don't necessarily hate what George Lucas did. I actually think that's cool, even though some of it I would not prefer, but
so like what's an example, you know, not to totally derail, but like what's an example of something that you liked from the special editions that George Lucas did, and what's an example of something you didn't like?
So I liked, for instance, and I think this is good conversation, because this I liked when they went to Mos Eisley, but there was all these what do you call those, establishing shots.
Yeah, like the dewbacks and stuff that they added.
To show the world, to show, like, I loved when the special editions, they were first showing what they were doing, and to me, it was mind-blowing that they CGI'd in a troop transport, like, in the background. And I was like, oh my god, CGI spaceships, you know, but, like, stuff like that. The things I didn't like, for instance, the Han shooting first. Like, I think that's an obvious one, but I think the main issue of that is you're kind of changing it an established character.
Right. You're altering characterization. It's not even just like I didn't like the way that this looked. It's you've changed something story.
And personally, coming from him, though, I can see as a creator where you go through things in life where then you would change your mind about something and hold strong. Like, to him, it could hold strong. He loves Han Solo so much now that he wouldn't want him to shoot first.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of, so it's and like
Tomino, I think, feels the same way about a lot of Gundam scenes, for sure.
Yeah, that's right. You've brought that up in some of the interviews that you've read. I remember you bring that up. So that is kind of an interesting similarity. And other things that it's like, there's other things that I like, but don't like how they went about it. Like, I love that they added back in Jabba, and they even green screened in a Boba Fett. That's cool with me. But them deciding to CGI or do the tail thing where he walks over the
joke,
then that's what you're focusing on. And even though at the time for George Lucas, it was, how can we make this sort of revolutionary way to do special effects? So I appreciate that, but that takes you out of the moment. The thing about the original Star Wars movies is they did so good looking real that you weren't taken out of the moment about how fake something looked. You were just like, oh my God, look at what's happening. So when I see Han walk over Jabba's tail and it just looks like, you know, a modern YouTube video where they do those shifts.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. And it's like,
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is I actually saw a recent interview with a comedy actor where he was talking about these types of things. And I swear this has a point. So bear with me here. If you're familiar with the comedy actor, a British guy by the name of Matt Berry, he was asked a question about his approach to comedy. And he made this point that I think is very important. He was like, the more ludicrous, the more like outside of the ordinary, the more that you're asking the audience to suspend their disbelief, the more seriously you as the comedy actor need to take it. And you need to feel like if your character's supposed to be offended, you need to be seriously offended. Because as soon as you let the audience know that you, the person that's playing the character, is in on the joke with you, then it takes you out of the moment and you're not buying into it. So it's like something like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. We laugh at these absurd situations because the characters in the show are taking it so seriously. Yeah. There's no like wink at the camera saying like, hey, we know that we're doing this absurd stuff.
No, that's cool you brought that up, because I learned recently in Austin Powers, the scenes with Dr. Evil and Seth Green, they purposely did it where Seth Green was doing it dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
So they did that on purpose to have that juxtaposition of this goofy movie, but then there's like this father-child drama in it, and it works. You know, that's a good, yeah, that's a good.
Which, hey, you know, 6 degrees of Star Wars, Carrie Fisher in there as a therapist.
There you go. Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the scene, too. Wow. That's funny. Yeah, interesting.
So yeah, to go back to your point, like having that comedic moment when you're already asking the audience to suspend their disbelief in this fantastic universe that you've created.
Yeah.
It just completely deflates it.
And it's funny because the only reason that was done was because they were trying to solve a problem, but it's interesting how sometimes solving a problem, you can make it bigger than it was. But you know what's interesting, though? I will say the difference with Tomino and George Lucas is Tomino was having to edit long form into a short form. So it's more like Tomino has to be a little more clever with that, because he's having to take long involved stories and try to truncate them into a newer format, because then they're redoing some animations and then some of his ideals maybe have changed, where George Lucas is still working within that movie. So it's like, okay, do I just make this scene longer or shorter, or add this or not, you know?
Right. Yeah. I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that George Lucas cut anything from the original trilogy. He only added to or altered.
Yeah,
right?
I think exactly. Like changing the actor of the Emperor, for instance, like,
which that was another great choice, because honestly, I mean, the monkey eye mask thing was kind of goofy looking. And I think that the Emperor looks more menacing when it's like his hood covers his face. And
you know what? You know what's cool? I need to bring this up. Like, to me, there was a moment early in my life with Star Wars when it's this big sci-fi epic, but then the main bad guy is a wizard that shoots lightning. Like, I remember there was a moment, you know, in like when I like Star Wars, you know, after that, you know, where I guess I'm consuming more media, different storytelling tropes and stuff. But to me, I always find it fascinating. A wizard that shoots lightning is the main bad guy in the sci-fi universe.
I think that's what makes it so imposing, right? Is like, you know, you're in this universe where these giant space battles are happening, and the most dangerous weapon in the galaxy is this giant ball that shoots a laser beam that blows up planets. And yet the thing that people are most afraid of is not the giant ball that shoots lasers, but the decrepit old guy that shoots lightning.
Yeah.
And like, if that doesn't kind of make you kind of question, and I think that George Lucas saw that in the first movie and expanded upon that with Master Yoda, right? Is like, oh, well, we need to find this warrior. And so the subversion of expectations is when he finds Yoda, and it's this old, like, little Muppet that, you know. So it's like the most powerful things in the universe are not giant weapons that are man-made constructions, but they are it's wisdom, right? It's the elderly. It's the people that have learned over time how to exploit situations and how to exploit the world around them. You know, Yoda being the good version of that and the Emperor being the bad version of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of interesting. So there's things like that. That's very interesting how George Lucas chose to, you know, and for me, the same thing that happens in Gundam, I like, or in Star Wars, I like in Gundam, kind of the same. It's where in the battle, the main battle that has to happen, the main pivotal moment of the battle are usually these two people that there's more going on with them than what the world is dealing with. And part of that is what has them there. And I like that idea. Like, you know, it almost makes it where it's like in our real world, how do we not know that there's like these, a guy that is clashing with his father, in maybe a secret base in Antarctica, and that like that hinges on our safety of the planet. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Cause like the Ewoks aren't thinking like, oh, I hope Luke gets Darth Vader, so we're good. You know, no one's thinking that. They're just like, hope the rebels can stop the Empire. you know.
Right. Yeah.
Although in that case, I need to correct myself. It wasn't Darth Vader, it was the Emperor he needed to stop. But technically, the change is anyway. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hey, same thing with Amuro and Char, right? It's like, you know, nobody is looking at the fight between Amuro and Char and saying like, man, I hope Amuro can pull it off. It's like, no, we're hoping that the Federation beats Zeon. But then, like you said, Char isn't necessarily the one that Amuro needs to beat to end the war.
And it's not like anyone's saying, oh, this new mobile suit, the son of the designer is going to be fighting the son of the original, House of Zeon or what, you know what I mean? Like no one's thinking that. And I think that is the cool subplot that I like in these stories. Is there like a word for that? Is that like a trope?
I'm sure that there is some kind of like, you know, the micro versus the macro conflict, right? Where you're looking at the personal conflict, but then you're looking at the global conflict that's happening within the world.
And that they're related. Like, that's why I think it's amazing. What if that's going on like right now? And I hate to sound insensitive, but just to say, like, let's say between Palestine and Israel, there are these related father son that really everything is based on that. I mean, I that's more religion, which is very interesting because other than Chronicles of Riddick and maybe Battlestar Galactica, now that I've been watching that, you know, religion being used in sci-fi as the way. And I guess actually, okay, I'm sorry. All these ideas just came to my head.
It's so amazing how they all kind of like interconnect and inspire one another. And
well, that doesn't end because then I'm thinking Star Wars does the religion thing too, but they don't really focus on force users except for more of like outside of, maybe the end of Revenge of the Sith, you know, and before Star Wars. But even though religion is a big thing, it's not like that was condemned. You know, like in A New Hope, you had one of those Admiral guys, not an Admiral, one of the, you know, official guys at the beginning talking to Darth Vader, talking down about the Force and all that. But it's not like through A New Hope or Empire Strikes Back, there was a sort of like, and obviously, I don't think George Lucas was thinking of it at the time, but this kind of thing like, oh, is this a Force user? Does someone believe in the Force? Let's wrangle up all the people that believe in the Force. Not that they can use the Force, but they believe in the Force. The idea of wrangling them up, that wasn't really a thing in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting. That seems like that would be a very important plot point. I know they want to rid of Jedi, but more of the idea of let's wrangle up these Force users and then having scenes of them in concentration camps. That might sound sensitive, I'm sorry, but then doing experiments, you know?
No, I mean, you know, it's interesting to me that, like you said, it's, you know, okay, we're going to round up people that have these beliefs, but then like the guy that's enforcing it is also one of the believers of this thing. Like, Darth Vader himself believes in this ancient origin. Like you said, this imperial general is sitting there saying like, oh, you know, you cling to this old religion and these wizard ways and things like that. And it's like, wait a second, aren't you relying on that guy to go find everybody who believes the same things and get rid of them?
Interesting. So I wonder if then that, you know, not that this was planned, but what if in the Star Wars world, it is the idea is not to condemn Force users and just condemn Jedi in order to allow people like the Emperor and his people to not be persecuted for being a Force user or whatever, you know, or being called out for being a Force user. Interesting stuff. I'm sorry. I just keep thinking like stories that could be told in Gundam that, They've kind of done the religion thing. There was the second half of Thunderbolt, you know, that kind of had that going on.
Yeah, which was an interesting interesting angle because typically people don't associate, you know, religiosity with Gundam as a franchise, right? Like we don't.
It's so focused on more of the military industrial complex or the family ideologies affecting the greater world. But that also could speak to a future where maybe religion isn't then. It's more personal, you know? That's interesting. I think there's so many different ways stories could be told in Star Wars and Gundam. And I think that's why at the end of the day, Acolyte didn't do that well. Like, you know, I don't want something to fail. I don't want something Star Wars to fail. And there was cool stuff in the Acolyte. But, and so, okay, I want to bring up another topic that's kind of controversial. We talked about this a little earlier, and I'm going to bring it up because of the similarity to, like, you know, the Gundam fandom.
Sure.
And it's so for the Star Wars YouTubers, what we were talking about before, where there's that whole thing where there's a Star Wars Explained, there's Star Wars Theory. And I guess the idea was, you know, Star Wars Explained kind of called for people like Theory and others to be canceled. Now, that's just kind of, you can have differences with people, but asking someone to be canceled, what if they're making money doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, and if they haven't really done it, like, I think there's even a response from YouTube saying, you know, those channels haven't done anything wrong. But what is interesting was, I think it really stemmed from true fans that just love Star Wars. And so they love Acolyte. So when they see people hate on Acolyte and then Acolyte gets canceled, it's interesting to see then this kind of emergence of this kind of a warrior-like, even though Disney already canceled it, but then there's people, influencers, that then want to actively cancel people that don't like the Acolyte. And I think that's weird. And I just see it in terms of a Gundam fan, or not Star Wars fan base. Like, just let's look at it as a Star Wars fan base. Now you have Star Wars people that are fighting online. So Disney's seeing it. Consumers are seeing it. Companies are seeing it. And whose fault was it? Well, I mean, people are being dumb and then, yeah, maybe picking up on the YouTube video and, you know, but like Disney also at the end of the day, this might show that, yeah, if you come out with half baked stuff, like people don't know how to respond or react.
Yeah.
Like you have 40 years of storytelling and now it doesn't make sense. So that everyone's confused, frustrated. We don't know how to take out our anger. So then we want to cancel people that have negative opinions, which that's the thing. Like at the end of the day, I wish well for everybody, you know?
Well, and so that's okay. See, this is a very interesting topic because technically something like this has already happened in the Gundam fandom, right? In 1979 when Gundam was canceled.
Oh,
now here's it. So this is, I'm loving this parallel, right? Because like you said, if you take the personal out of it, like, you know, I don't care if you're a Star Wars Explained fan or a Star Wars Theory fan or both for that matter.
Yeah.
When you look at the response from fans, you look at the response of Gundam fans in 1979 when Gundam was canceled, is they went straight to the source and said, hey, you know, don't cancel this thing. We love it. Right. And there were different things that helped bring it back. Right. It was the zines. It was it was the soundtrack that came out. Right. And then all of a sudden we got the movie trilogy because it was like, oh, there actually are fans for this thing. Look, compare and contrast that with the behavior of fans of the Acolyte, which is we assume that the reason the Acolyte was canceled is not because the product was bad, is not because of anything that we did. We assume that it was canceled because there were people that didn't like it. Can you imagine what the history of Gundam would have looked like if the people that loved Gundam said, the real problem is these Gigantor and Transformers fans that are talking bad about Gundam. They're the ones that, like, do you see how...
Very interesting. Like, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
It's such an interesting just juxtaposition of the behavior of the fandoms, right? And so, like, imagine if you would... If fans of things that get canceled nowadays, instead of trying to counter cancel people that didn't like those things, if they instead reinvested their time, their money, their energy into showing how much they love these things, would they have a different outcome? Would they instead get a season two of The Acolyte?
Yeah, you know, good point. Of what if there was a really positive, motivating campaign around bringing Acolyte back? Because shows get brought back.
Yeah, all the time. I mean, even like something like Firefly, which that show got canceled and then they got a movie out of it because of the fan outcry for it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that's not the mentality that people have anymore. I think that there's more of this tribalism where, you know, you either are dancing on the graves of the show that gets canceled or you're dancing on the grave of the YouTube channel that didn't like the show. Right.
Yeah, you're bringing up a good point. It kind of goes back to, you know, positivity is really the only thing. Like, if people are upset the show got canceled, let's not, like, point a finger and then start calling people out and asking for their livelihoods to be destroyed. Let's talk about everything we liked about The Acolyte and maybe make content to direct it to Disney. Be like, look at all, because what this is now showing is, if you were to take it at face value, Acolyte fans are toxic people. But that's not the case, because that would be the, you know, the hypocrisy of, you know, but that's the optics then. So Disney would be like, okay, we got to step away from, you know, that.
And it goes back to the conversation that you and I had a few this is months ago, I think, where it was like, especially around the time that Witch from Mercury came out, it's like, if you can't talk positively about the thing that you like without denigrating something that you don't, then how much do you really like the thing that you say? Because I think that was a lot of the conversation going on, where it was like, oh, well, you know, 0083 is my favorite series, or Gundam Seed is my favorite series, because unlike Witch from Mercury, it does this, this, and this. Yeah. And it's like, well, can you defend the series that you like without bringing up the one that you don't? Or is there something else going on here?
Yeah, that's always the interesting thing. And again, it's things like, I think as an individual, you can learn to kind of control that. Because I think even with me, I felt like it would be really hard, but it wasn't, where I kind of stepped back and being really into Star Wars. It was, I forget if it was the Obi-Wan show or the Boba Fett show. One of those where it's like, man, I'm just now complaining. I just won't be heavily invested. Yeah, if a new show comes on, I'm going to go watch it. But I probably won't spend time like making a video or playing with Star Wars figures. I put all my Star Wars figures in the attic. I'm sad, but
yeah.
No, if they made a figure of Kay Vess from the Star Wars Outlaws, I would totally buy that though. Cause that,
really?
That game is fun. Yeah. I like that.
The updated character model or the original. I'm teasing you.
That's what's funny about it. But I do like the character, even though, you know, there's a lot of people that don't. It to me, it's just like Han Solo.
And I think that you brought that up in your reviews, like over on Blue Gamer, was that it's like, it's not a role-playing game in the traditional sense where you are creating a character and like you get to play who you want to play. You are basically playing the role of this character, Kay Vess. It's like, you know, she has a character that you are just acting out, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. At the same time, though, when I'm going action to action, I'm still kind of role-playing it. And what's cool about it is, like, and I think this is what works for the game, because it's, like, open-ended, and it's almost like whatever happens, happens. So most of the time, I'm messing something up or causing a problem, but your character's always saying, like, oh, no, here we go. It's, like, it's always, like, Han Solo-type one-liners, and I, like, feel like, even I'll say it. I'll be like, I remember
specifically. We're fine. Everything's fine. How are you?
It was specifically, I was at a pirate base. I happened to come across the back half of it, so I was going to sneak in and get some stuff. But then a stormtrooper transport landed, and I'm like, oh, perfect. I can just quickly go into this place and grab it. And I walk in, and a guy's standing there looking at me, and I'm like, okay. And then I jarred out. He starts shooting, and then the stormtroopers see the action, and it's. The game has those little moments, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. And what's funny to me is, like, from what I've seen of the gameplay, is like it does look very similar to something like a game that I love, which is Metal Gear Solid 5, where it's you know, I can't tell you how many times I think that I've cleared a guard post and then I come around a corner and there's a guy there, and of course you have like the reflex mode, and so it all goes slow motion, and they're like, oh,
that's in. That was that fast talking thing that we were talking about earlier in Star Wars Outlaws, where it's the slow, like you have a chance to put your hands up, but then you can like quick draw and stuff.
And then you can shoot first.
But you know what? Man, every time I talk about a cool part of a game, you're able to explain away Metal Gear Solid 5 does it. I really need to just play through it all.
Yeah, I remember it was like when I saw people on Twitter talking about Outlaws, and they were like, you know, oh, what kind of gameplay is this? And it's like, you know, she'll like grab the head of a stormtrooper and slam it against a wall. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that I've literally done that as Venom Snake. Now you can make the argument about realism, right? Like, okay, a 235-pound guy is more likely to be able to grab someone by the head and smash it against a wall than, you know, a 160-pound woman. But like, to say that it's bad gameplay is to be dishonest, because it's literally the same gameplay. It's just the context is different, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you're doing the same thing. You're sneaking up on a guy. You're slamming him on the ground. Now, like you said, it's the character that's different. But it's not that the gameplay is bad. It's just that, you know, you can complain about the realism of it, right?
Yeah. It's like in the old Star Wars SNES games when there would be a double jump.
Yeah.
It's like, that's bad gameplay. Luke can't double jump yet. I don't know. But yeah, it's funny because I think that's a gaming thing. And I wonder if that's an isolated thing to where games weren't real. They were just little obstacles and puzzles. But nowadays, sometimes they're trying to make them feel like you're playing something that feels grounded and real. And yeah, it takes away from possibility of what the gameplay can do.
And you know what? There's a lot to blame like Unreal Engine for. Is like, you know, we get obsessed with like graphical fidelity instead of gameplay mechanics.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And on that note, that's it for the show today. Well, this is a good one. I'm glad we got to meet up because yesterday we couldn't and today we almost didn't. So I'm glad we did. Glad so many of you were able to join the chat and join us for this. So
yeah. Saw some lively discussion in there. So
yeah, I know. That was awesome.
Yeah, always good.
Anyway, congrats again to the winner of the giveaway. So please send me an email. And everyone have a good weekend. And we will talk again next week. See you all.
Cheers.